Hello and welcome to episode 31 of the Sales Syndicate podcast. This week we're going to be talking about not being a prick. Now, more to come on that one. That's not going to be the title. We've already had a quick discussion about that. But before we get into the topic and the broader discussion, I'll just hand over to my guest today, Corey Lindsay, to introduce himself and a bit about the business that he works for as well.
Thank you, Jamie. Yeah, excited to be here. So as mentioned, my name is Corey Lindsay. I work for a company called Lunio, Lunio AI, working specifically with PPC specialists and the overall kind of performance marketing world. Actually only recently joined them back in January, but very familiar with the business, having worked with them since about a year or so prior, effectively them being somewhat of a client of mine, somewhat. So an exciting journey in that sense to come to working here. But no, super exciting company, very fast growing, scale up, just how I like to work.
So what does Lunio do, you know, the layman's term?
Yeah, in essence, and this is kind of something that really shocked me when I first got kind of knowledgeable about the space. So everyone knows that bots, scrapers, non-humans kind of live on the internet almost more than humans do now, to be quite frank, which is in itself a bit of a scary stat. What a lot of people don't necessarily see or realize is a lot of them end up clicking on your Google ads, your Facebook ads, Pinterest, TikTok, maybe all the different kind of social advertising and pay-per-click that exists. Even as much as to like 1 in 10, sometimes even higher actually for that. I think the average is about 1 in 10 across the internet of all clicks on ads are clicked on by bots, scrapers, basically stuff you don't want to be paying for. So it's effectively, and again, an algorithm, a machine learning algorithm that identifies and blocks those from ever being kind of presented with the ads. So when you're talking to companies who spend $5 million a month on advertising, you can tell them they're wasting $500,000 a month. Obviously, it perks ears quite quickly. Again, quite an easy fix to a lot of companies, which is also quite exciting. But a really weird problem most people aren't really aware of. So a lot of my job is actually just chatting to people, trying to somewhat build their trust in a really authentic way, which is why I'm quite excited to talk about this today, because the concept isn't that well known, at least not to the degree that it exists.
No, obviously I sit in marketing, so I'm probably more aware of it than others might be. Sorry if you heard a cup falling over in the background there. But, so I'm probably more aware of it, but I mean, even I didn't know the sort of 1 in 10 on average stat. So that it is very interesting, and definitely go check out the website. I mean, even if you just go and check out the website for the fact it looks bloody lovely.
It's not bad, is it? That's credit to
It is a very, very nice website. You know, marketing, I like the way things look, colouring with crayons and everything.
Absolutely.
It does look good. So how long have you, just in terms of your broader career, how long have you been in sales?
Yeah, so I started in sales in the summer of 2019. Not too dissimilar to, dare I say, almost every person I've spoken to. I stumbled into it by accident, straight out of uni, and into an SDR role. At the time, didn't really know what that meant, and now I realize is actually just the foundation of any AE role as well. If you're good at the SDRing, you'll be great at the AE side as well. At least have a higher chance of being so. So yeah, starting 2019 as SDR at a company called G2, the largest review platform for B2B software. Just in their founding team for Europe. I think the European team started about a month before I joined, which is accidentally very exciting as well, and kind of got me into falling in love with the idea of startups and how they work, how it's really scrappy, how if you don't do well, the company doesn't do well, but vice versa. So a very extreme roller coaster there. From G2, I was there for about 3 years or so, and then moved on to a small company in between that didn't quite work out, and now to Lunio, which is, yeah, back to the grassroots of software building and company building.
No, I have to agree with you there on the startup thing. I was in much, much bigger companies, probably for 8 years or so, like 8 billion revenue, that sort of thing.
And yeah, you just
feel like a worker ant, like a tiny little cog in a massive machine, and you just don't get the same gratification or, I guess, progression. You don't learn as much as you do in startups. So
I don't know if anyone's
listening isn't at a startup or working in SaaS or tech, definitely give it a go. It's the, you know, you will not learn at the same pace at a much larger company, But right, let's get on to the topic of discussion, which is, like we said, sort of alluded to, don't be a prick in sales, but what we actually mean by that, in a more, I don't know, PG or more, business, B2B.
Business connotation.
Yeah. I think what we're really talking about here is how and why authenticity is such a valuable skill, such an important skill. So do you just want to give us like a really, really quick rundown of, you know, what you meant by that and, you know, why we're going to be talking about that today?
Yeah, I think it's something that's always been around, right? The stereotype of the filthy salesperson that's going to come flog you something and steal your money. Always been around, to be quite frank, is something that initially put me off slightly, potentially even joining the sales career right back when. Before realizing quite quickly that, again, just being surrounded by really, really strong and authentic salespeople, that status quo really isn't the status quo anymore. At least it isn't for what I'd like to think a top performing companies and top performing individuals at once, and how strongly correlated that is to success. That whole idea of being authentic, being real, being honest and challenging people based on what you think may be correct, as opposed to what you want out of someone, which often for salespeople, end of the day, is probably their budget, does get you really far. And it's something, I don't know, it's almost like something I've just lived by in the whole kind of time I've been in sales, and try to really focus on and almost ground myself back to if I feel myself kind of diverting away from it. So far it's doing me well in that sense. It's an interesting one. Definitely want to, we can dig into it a bit more during this time here, but I feel like it's something that really does stand core to most people who actually end up being really successful in sales, and actually something which I wish to be as well.
No, it's weird because when I, before I moved into sort of SaaS, and before I actually started sitting next to the sales team, I probably would have had that same
opinion,
incorrect view or opinion on sales. And, you know, my mum always used to say, when I grow my hair, she looks like, you look like a sleazy car salesman. And there's always that, like, that like old school, that legacy view of Del Boy and opening his jacket and all the call centers that you used to see on TV and stuff. And they even had a blimmin' program called Call Center, didn't it? So that's where your head immediately goes. But
on that same topic, my dad is, I mean, used to have my hair a little bit longer, a little bit more slick back, and I had the exact same kind of remark for the last 2.5 years of how I'm a sleazy car salesperson and refer to various large car brands and their famous people associated to their adverts. Which is always fun.
But was it at least a German car brand and not a Citroën or a Renault?
No, it's actually all the Citroën Renault side of things. I'm half French, guess makes more sense. But yeah, no, not quite the high end cars.
No, the sickening thing is I can actually imagine myself using that line in 15 or 20 years, if and when I have kids at that age. Which is bad. You end up becoming your parents, don't you?
But, yeah.
right. So we've sort of touched on a couple of those. Those traits, let's say. So do you want to just run us through a few of those bad traits that we're talking about here in terms of, you know, avoiding being a prick and being authentic? What are the traits that we're trying to avoid here?
I think there's only really one to pretty fundamentally come back to, and everything will come down to this one, which is understanding what they want. And I guess breaking that down even further, it's, well, yes, we're trying to sell something. Yes, we're trying to sell something which will benefit us or grow our company, whatnot, but no one wants to buy just for the sake of buying. They don't buy a product, they buy an outcome. And they buy a product which they believe has the strongest chance of leading to that outcome that they want, whatever that may be. In my case, it's improving the optimization and basically having your paid advertising to actually convert better, improve the cost of acquisition and improve the kind of return on ad spend, things like that. But ultimately, they're not buying Lunio. They're buying those outcomes, which they hopefully will do via Lunio. So that's the main thing that they want, right? Now, what I feel like, and I definitely was doing this a lot at the start, is, well, how can I make sure that I say whatever needs to be said so that they agree that we are the outcome, as opposed to flipping it on his head, which is something I've seen a lot more sales trainers do and a lot of people around me doing more and more, which is incredible, is, well, what are those actual outcomes? What do they want to achieve? Is it, again, high level metrics? How do those metrics portray? How are they affected in their world? And then I think just being very honest with yourself and myself and whoever's the salesperson in the shoes of, can we actually solve this? Like, honestly, like, hold back. Can we actually solve this issue and actually make an impact? Because the status quo is, oh, well, I've heard this term and these metrics heard in my role in my sales training. I'll just throw these terms at them and say we can do it, which, to be fair, sometimes works. That said, it's not long term. It kills a lot of credibility of the salesperson as well. So, again, keeping it short, the summary is it's just being really honest with yourself on what you can and can't do and what does the prospect actually want to achieve and is it possible to achieve with your tool. So honesty is really the main thing that comes through to me from this side of things.
No, I was going to pick up on your point where you said sort of maybe at the beginning, I don't know, the first 3 to 6 months of your sort of sales career that you would try and, I think the phrase I had in my head was you were trying to craft or trying to, you know, customize your product or solution to their exact needs by saying whatever you sort of had to say in the moment. And I obviously before these recordings, I try and do a little bit of reading or Googling, see if there's any sort of facts that would sort of be useful to reference. And I did find there was a study that was done in 2020, which actually basically found that by doing that, by trying to craft your product or solution, or by trying to like almost like push a square peg into a round hole.
Yeah.
It actually negatively impacts sales on pretty much 100% of the 100% of the occasions.
That's like, metrics.
It's it causes, it's more draining because you're constantly sitting there thinking, right, how am I going to spin this to fit? It's more stressful, which means you tend to take your eye off the ball of actually what does your product do and how does it help, because you're trying to make up a product on the spot. So you're literally trying to build a product on the spot. And yeah, in this Harvard study, it was basically every single statistic said it was negatively impacting the sales process. So I can definitely see see the sort of negative implications to it. But I think in today's, you know, you worked at G2, right? This is a perfect link up here, but buyers have all the power. So
absolutely,
like before buyers jump on a call with you, they've done their due diligence probably for 3 to 6 months before that, haven't they? They know what people are saying about the software. They know exactly what it does. They've hopefully potentially watched a few YouTube videos. They've been on some blogs. They've been on WhatsApp, you know, Slack. They've asked some questions. So they're coming to that call with a lot of information, which historically they wouldn't have had. So
no, absolutely.
They're going to look straight through that non-authentic sort of
I think you're right on that side, like looking straight through. And it's one thing, so I'm again just really interested in the whole kind of concept of behavioral economics, so like the psychology and neuroscience of decision making. Not something that's particularly well researched per se, at least not documented with that terminology, relative to kind of larger psychology and neuroscience topics. When you take some of that research in those types of fields into the business world, just this entire intention, you start to really see that the way that, let's say I was trying to, again, like you said, kind of fit a square peg into a round hole, the way that I would present myself will start to give off signals that I'm not being as authentic and as true to myself. I can only imagine if that goes through someone's mind, they kind of get doubts as to me as a person. That then is, I am the representative of the product at this point. That in itself will start to kill the chance of the deal. Now, yes, fine, you might get 3 out of 10, 2 out of 10. I don't know if they're real stats, by the way, but just make a couple of numbers up, for example, of extra deals through the door. True, it might have the short-term kind of benefits of that year. You might make a little bit few more extra bucks on commission and hit your quota a little bit higher. But what I often think a bit more about, and comes onto a wider topic of maybe how salespeople should be compensated as well, how many of those will then no longer trust you as an individual for future times, especially if you move to a different company selling to the same individuals, your trust on a human level is now broken because you kind of misled them. How many of those customers will then churn after a year and actually cost the business more to actually retain, work with them, acquire them than it will in terms of reap the rewards of the revenue they'll get from them. All these sorts of long-term implications, both on a personal and company level, I feel like are just not worth sacrificing just for the sake of trying to get a little extra penny. But again, going to a much broader topic of how sales reps can be compensated, because I know that's, again, not one I'm particularly familiar with, but one I've got maybe a few too many ideas about.
No, it's interesting because like the short term implication of you not necessarily lying, let's not call it lying, but trying to like you said, the square peg in a round hole. The short term implications are you're going to have to try and remember everything that you've promised them on that first call, and then you're going to have to go back to your product or tech team and say, "Oh, I've got this great opportunity, and all they need is this," and they're going to turn around and go, "Well, we can't do that." Yeah, and then you're going to go whimpering back to that prospect with your tails between your leg, trying to claw your way back, and that's the short term. Then, when they're a customer, if they don't do any due diligence and don't ask, and you get lucky, they're going to obviously have a bad adoption, bad user experience. They're not gonna renew. They might take a break. You might have had a, let's be honest, if you're using those tactics to try and sell, you've probably given them a 3 or 6 month break clause as well. And then they're not gonna renew. They're gonna churn, and it's gonna cost you loads of money. So yeah.
It's, I think one thing to be aware of, though, which not to kind of get the wrong idea to the listeners here as well, in terms of molding tools to problems as well, is that I think there's a fine balance between doing that with a level of, "I'm not too sure. I think as a salesperson, this could work this way," which I think a lot of the time people aren't doing it maliciously just to get a little, some extra cash. It's just like in their mind, it seems like it logically could, compared to being very knowledgeable on the theory of the tool, which is where I try and sit myself as much as I can and always strive towards really understanding as much as I can on the technical side, but again, within reason, I'm not that much of a techie, so there's only so much I can really understand, to then be able to share how the product could and also couldn't work in certain scenarios. I feel like if I can share that, and then every time I'm not sure, have that humbleness to, well, humility to share with them, "Hey, I think it's this, but I'm not sure," it is this.
It's interesting. I was speaking the guy called Nick Butler at Jiminy a couple of weeks back, and he said something very, very similar about the importance of being literally an expert at the tool. Because what he was saying is, just because it's not a key feature or a USP that's on your website, it doesn't mean that that tool could have a particular usage if you just flip it slightly and it's got a usage that is incredibly valuable to an audience or a use case that you didn't realize. So to your point there, it's not, we're not talking about that it's absolutely, avoid molding a tool to a use case, but it's like you said, it's being humble if you don't know the answer, rather than saying it does 100% of the things the person needs it to do, even if you don't know. So I think good clarification on that point there. But you were talking a lot about company, and I think in terms of like the company ethos, that's very, very important in terms of this authenticity as well, because you've got two different types of sales teams, right? You've got the sales teams that are led by a VP of sales who wants you to do $1,000 a week, and they can be to anyone, whether they're a chef, a builder, or a mechanic, just to get the numbers through the door and sell. And then you've got the VPs of sales who want you to, if you have 10 great ICP calls a day, fantastic. And there's, I think, do you want to just cover that a little bit more in terms of the company has to believe in that authenticity as well?
Yeah, I mean, there's a variety of different levels around it, in terms of, I guess your question is, well, how should the company try and promote that level of authenticity for long-term benefits as opposed to sacrificing that for short-term gain, right?
Yeah, 100%.
So how you can do that, I mean, it's not really one I actually not particularly thought too much about. I mean, I've been lucky enough to be in companies who, whatever it is, have it already. And I think a lot of that comes down to the belief in the product as well. One thing that, especially when I was looking for my new role, of which later found Lunio, the number one thing I wanted to do is be sold on it, like really sold, like undoubtedly sold on what the impact of this potential product is, and therefore be able to share that myself. So I think having that ability, if a company can have a product that is so good, or at least marketed in such a good way to the right ICP, to the right type of market and company size and style, that it becomes undoubtedly great, that flows through the entire company, whereby I then know if a prospect says, "Hey, I don't believe in that," I'm like, "Okay, well, fine, suit yourself." I'm convinced that potentially we can help you or can't help you, or somewhere in between usually, then it becomes just a matter of time. of nurturing that individual until eventually they realize, okay, something may work here. And again, that comes back to the authenticity level, right? I don't want to nurture 55,000 people. If I don't believe we can help someone, I'll tell them. I hope I'd be honest with myself and be able to tell them, and therefore not need to nurture them, not need to follow up with them, because I know that it's not the right scenario. But the vice versa, like, and that comes down to me being really able to understand the product and the company helping me understand it at a very technical level, both in the lens of the pain and the lens of the solution, right? Kind of these two angles coming together at once. So that's, I think, one part which is quite interesting, which I've always got a little bit more nerdy about in terms of understanding the product, which I think has helped me a lot. But that ability for a company to create that type of knowledge sharing internally, I think, can be super helpful as well, as maybe like one step towards that answer.
Yeah, no, I think, I 100% agree in terms of that, like, product line. Companies have sprint demos, they have weekly or bi-weekly sprint demos where they show new features, how they work, you know, that sort of stuff. And then you've got, I guess, your own initiatives of trying to get your head around the software as much as possible, so that you can better understand, like you said, the solution that you're offering, but also the problems and goals, yeah, and objectives that you're trying to basically, you know, fit your product to or align your product to. But then in terms of that, I guess, you know, as an individual, you can preach and try to be authentic, but ultimately the company's got to have the same culture, right? So the company has got, I think you were talking about the incentive. So if you're incentivized just to hit a certain number of calls a day, then your behavior is going to align to that objective, isn't it? But if the company is, the company culture or the company belief, the company KPIs are to incentivize quality rather than quantity, it's going to help that, help you maintain that authenticity.
Yeah, 100%. And I think one thing that helps with that, which currently is set up at Lunio, but I'm also very vividly aware that it's absolutely not possible in all companies, is that as an account executive, we have an awesome customer success team with kind of data individuals in the background to really help the customer succeed. As of today, and this may change in future, I still own part of the customer relationship once they sign. So I have accountability on whatever I sign. If, for example, I sign something terrible that's completely lied about and the worst case scenario, I've still got to see this person's face at least once a quarter and show up for it. So I think that's quite a good deterrent to sell bad deals. But also it means that, again, I won't necessarily have any benefit for renewing the customer flat. If they sign on for us for 20,000 GBP and they renew at 20,000, I won't get any additional benefit per se. But it also means that when I stick around, I sell something really clean. Often customers grow very quickly, especially in the SaaS world. I get direct benefit from that. So I'm the one that still owns the relationship. I still have the trust. And one thing I'm not being fully able to have myself just yet, just based on not being in the company too long, but other people in similar roles who've been here for 2 years plus, they now get referrals very, very easily, which obviously is an absolute goldmine for a salesperson. All of this because you sell quite cleanly. And I think because the relationship is forced to remain between the account executive and the buyer or buying committee. Again, I'm aware that's not possible for many companies. They have to implement an account management, relationship management function. But I just thought that was quite an interesting setup that already existed when I kind of came into Lunio, which, yes, has its benefits on a financial sense, but also, I don't know, it just helps morally, just selling better deals and seeing the success of the product and filtering that back into how I sell the product and saying, hey, I spoke to a company XYZ and that I sold to them 6 months ago. Obviously, this has not happened just yet, but I'm envisioning it. And they're doing XYZ. They tried this way, it failed this way, but they tried at a different angle. And oh, wait, look, it actually worked really well this way. Have you tried this, Mr. Mrs. Prospect? That entire level, again, fueling that additional level of knowledge of how the product not only works at a theoretical level, which is typically what most sales enablement courses and internal discussions will look at, but how does it actually work? And often there's a bit of a discrepancy between those two questions. Some obviously companies larger than others, but yeah, an interesting point I wanted to bring to the podcast, because it's, yeah, it really caught my attention as a structure, but obviously aware that most companies may not be in a position or able to produce something like that.
No, it's weird actually, because I had our head of, well, global director of CS on the podcast, and one of the talking points was that our sales team and CS team have been speaking about that initiative for a while in terms of how they could make it work. And I think it's a perfect example of a company culture or company structure that is built around encouraging that authentic behavior. Because imagine how awkward it would be every 3 months they're speaking to a prospect that, you know, you missold to. That's going to be, you know, you're going to be ill on that day every quarter, let's put it that way.
Yeah, or, at least you won't be particularly comfortable.
Or on holiday or something. Yeah, it's going to be awkward. But I think, that's super, super interesting. And then to your point about, you know, that feedback loop of actually how a customer ends up using it might not be a way that the company actually knew it could be used. And I think we had a customer using our product, and we do sell to marketers as well, but the way in which we traditionally tried to sell to marketers is building lists. And actually what this marketing department was doing was actually using our platform for podcast outreach. So they were using sales triggers like a funding round or a company scaling, like hiring, to reach out and say, you know, you fit our audience perfectly. We see you've had great success in the last couple of months. We'd love to get you on the podcast to share your expertise. And they had a mad amount of success off the back of that. And we would never have envisaged the marketing department using it almost kind of like a sales team. But it ended up being a use case that we've actually adopted for this podcast and using the product. And I think those feedback loops are so, so important in terms of molding, like we say, it goes back to that molding appropriately, or molding truthfully, I guess.
Yeah, I think it goes back to what I think is a somewhat of an issue in the space as well, is a lot of these feedback loops are very manual. It relies on the customer success team putting time aside to document and summarize probably hundreds of calls into a variety of a few and in bullet point nature for the front kind of new biz team to learn from, as opposed to there being an automated solution. So to be honest, if anyone's out there wants to build a tool, I think that's one which I've seen that seems like is really required. And yes, there are a few customer success tools out there, but a lot of which seem to be really focused on managing and growing and understanding customers, as opposed to understanding with the intention to share that knowledge internally. Again, for improved morale, understand the product really does work, solidifying that mission of a company and what we're trying to achieve in the world, but then also then having that implement into the front end kind of new business team to sell better and high quality and just a lot more authentically, right? Because if you know what does and doesn't work to the theoretical level, you can qualify in and out very, very quickly and save yourself a lot of time.
Yeah, no, I think that would be... Well, write that one down as a tool.
Try ever get bored on a Sunday afternoon, I'll look to build a tool.
Have a hackathon. See if we can build a tool. But right, so we've spent a good amount of time talking about, I guess, the ins and outs of, you know, the authenticity side of things. But I just want to cover some of the, I don't know if there's like top tips or strategies or things that you week on week you remind yourself of, or things in terms of the buying journey where there are actually structured points of, like, not a tick box exercise, but to ensure that you stay authentic. Is there anything that you can share in terms of if someone wants to improve their authenticity, any tactics, tips, strategies that you could share that have worked well for yourself or for Lunio, like the structure you were talking about?
The main one comes from within, right? It's being really honest with yourself, which no one can really force you to do or not do, on whether or not you truly believe the prospect can actually, and again, I'm speaking more from an account executive perspective here, as opposed to just a like an SDR, BDR perspective, although somewhat the concepts remain true and can be converted as well. But again, being honest with yourself on can I, Corey, really see these guys, these people really gaining benefit, and how and why? If the answer is not yes, there's probably still more discovery to do. Or one thing which I don't do as often as I would like to do, but something which I would like to be even more consistent about, is saying, hey, again, going to the prospect, I you mentioned this. I don't think that fits perfectly into how our tool works. Is that an issue for you? Do you think that's, is that really important? Because if so, we probably can't do something to the level you want. Like almost throwing it back at them, be like, we may not be perfect. It's a risky one. Sometimes it might kill a deal. Then again, is that better long term? I would argue yes. Some may argue no. But that I think could be quite an interesting one. Again, being really honest with yourself. I've never done this, but if that's something that people struggle with per se, and from a sales perspective, that is, there's no reason why you can't get like an accountability partner. Like almost do deal reviews with a close individual and get them just to really break down and just crush all your deals and make almost try and make them fail and just stress test them. I've not done this a huge amount, but to be honest, like something which I think would be really beneficial to a lot of the people in the team, especially as we as a company here at Lunio get more and more sophisticated, get more and more ability to choose our pipeline, because all the account executives right now, bar a handful, are all very new. So at this point, it's just build, to really stress test. So that could be an interesting one from that side as well. And one thing that eventually worked well for me as an SDR, but almost one of the ways that I eventually got to this point of thinking this is quite important, is on a cold call, on a cold email, same thing, challenge. Hey, you mentioned X. Does that mean you care about Y, or what makes you not care about X? Being sometimes almost too direct, I think is what I got called in the office last week, being called very direct, which fine, yeah, I am, I guess, but I feel like it does also build that authenticity as well, just saying what you think, saying what you don't think, but always with an angle of, I don't know, I'm not sure. This is my theory, my hunch. This is what I think may be important or not important to you. Now it's your job, Mr. and Mrs. Prospect, to prove me right or prove me wrong. Might be completely off, might be bang on. But that kind of angle of curiosity, which I think can be taught. I think a lot of people kind of improve. I definitely did not have it at the start of my career, but I feel like I've kind of got better and better at it as well. It's something that's worth looking at. And how to teach that, I don't really know. Not an expert on that answer per se. But yeah, in terms of thinking of within, being honest with yourself and otherwise, and potentially even adjacently, having an accountability partner to really make sure that you are being authentic with the way that you're selling and how you're trying to fundamentally help people rather than just make money, is an interesting one. Again, many a stories across colleagues and myself to share that really do show the long-term benefits of that rather than just the short-term.
Okay, so I think there were three sort of key points that you shared. So number one is, you know, the buck stops with you, right? So unless you truly, truly believe in the approach, there's no point starting. So you've got to believe in being authentic. You've got to believe in, you know, honoring that sort of process. Two was, I think, directness. And I think this is interesting because asking those honest, direct questions, even if they could lead to a negative outcome, was something that I covered in an episode a couple of weeks ago. And I think it's being confident that if your solution doesn't fit, that it is going to be better in the long run is something that I think, like you said, you can't necessarily train it, but I think it's something that you just get with time, and naturally you get more confident over time, because you've gone through 100 sales processes or whatever. And I think asking those difficult direct questions for me, like if someone was asking me that on the sales call, 100% I'd have more respect for them as a seller, because one, they're obviously listening; two, they're obviously very, very interested in trying to make it work, or at least trying to understand if it will work, should work. And three, you know, just as an individual, clearly they're not just focused on the money side of things. And then the third one was that buddy system, which I quite like. You know, I'd imagine a lot of more mature sales teams, in terms of, you know, structure and documentation and stuff, probably have those deal reviews as part of their weekly one-to-ones or quarterly reviews, where, you know, you have a look back and see how many are ICP fit, how many of them ended up churning, how many of them went through break clause. And I think that, yeah, like holistic evaluation processes is a very good way of actually looking back and almost, you know, how much did you score last quarter in terms of authenticity? Really, really interesting ones.
I think you're almost a very practical for that last point. You almost summarized it better than I did, to be quite frank, Jamie. But that last point of kind of accountability side of things, one thing I'm just thinking about, I even did last week with a colleague and an AE in our team as well, is almost just share all my notes, all my understanding. What do I know about this prospect? What do I think I should know? And just ask them to where are the holes, quite simply. Where are my gaps in my knowledge? Which again, isn't too much into the authenticity side of things and being honest, but it's also just at the same time, it is being honest with what you don't know and what you need to know. Potentially, I, again, kind of giving myself my own ideas now as well, of almost broaden that up as well to ask things like, well, do you, Mr. Mrs. Colleague, reckon that this would be a good fit? Like, honestly, would you reckon it's a good fit? Why do you think they would not work well with us? Maybe almost broadening to that question could actually be quite interesting to stress test deals as well.
Yeah, that's an interesting one. I mean, there's a lot of research or studies to show that, like, getting peer feedback or advice on things is always great. But I think that's a nice idea of, you know, would you sell to these people? Or, you know, is this a go or no go? Like, do you think it's worth investing more time into, or would you just, would you shut it down? That way. You alluded to some stories of the results of maintaining that authenticity in terms of the long play, let's say. Do you have one or two in mind, or just some examples?
Yeah. Got one that springs straight to mind. Just because I actually spoke to this person a few weeks ago as well. This was a unicorn SaaS business out of Israel that I sold to, well, first started speaking to in December 2020. I'd just become an AE. And I didn't feel comfortable selling to them just because what they wanted was something they couldn't do. For context, they were relatively recent. They didn't have many customers as when I was working at G2. And what they initially wanted was reviews. The fundamental issue there was, well, if you haven't got many customers yet, or at least not many users who are open and willing to share public feedback, we can't get reviews. That's a bit of a blocker, to the point where I opted to actively tell him, let's catch up. We'll catch up in 5-6 months once this is a different scenario. We still joke, him and I, now that he felt like he was trying to sell to me at that point, which is funny. But again, just the overall outcome there was we actually ended up working together about 7 months later for about 3x the annual contract value, because again, it ended up being the much higher package that was the only one that could ever work for them. But that was the reality that they were aware of as well. And even to this day, again, the actual partnership, I think, had a few kind of hiccups along the way. I wasn't, again, the person working on the deal per se, but still chatting with the main points of contact. And then since now joining, again, this individual was a marketer. Since now joining Lunio, I even caught up with him a few weeks ago. He actually used our top competitor in the past. He wasn't really ready to use any new tool like us yet. So again, it's not an open opportunity for me just yet, but maybe one for future. But he then felt really comfortable in saying kind of the full experience as to why he considered our competitors, how he considered them, the absolutely incredible things, which obviously there always will be. So the beauty of that relationship that I forged with the individual and actually the team alongside it, meant that yes, I had the benefits of, well, building probably the most amount of trust I've ever built in any deal still to this day, to be quite frank. And there was an increased deal size just based on what made logical sense to them. But now I'm also speaking to the individual, spoken a couple of times with that individual and in my new role. Because again, they're different company, same style of persona, although the individual is not quite perfect, he's still able to help. They actually use a competitor of ours, or used to use a competitor of ours. And the information that he shared with me, I mean, is something that I took straight to our product team, straight to our sales team. He was happy for me to share that. And that was about how he met the competitor, what some of their tactics were to actually try and convince him, bring him on board, why some of it worked, why a lot of it absolutely did not work for him in the scenario he was in. Again, information which I don't even think many customers would share until maybe a couple of years down to a really close relationship. And for some reason, he felt really comfortable sharing that with me to help me understand my new space that I just walked into, a different angle of marketing, which is the paid side. He's offered to, again, refer different people in my way as well, which, again, I've not made any asks as of yet, but something I'm super humbled by. And again, if I can get someone like that of that kind of status within the marketing world within Israel to actually offer that, I'm humbled and absolutely excited for whenever that happens.
Yeah, no, we didn't really cover that too much, but the you know, we were only really talking about the benefits in your current role. But when you actually move on to a different company, you've still built those relationships with people. And I think that's the point. If you get a reputation of being an authentic salesman, whatever product you end up selling, you have got a very, very good opportunity, you know, if there's ICP product fit or whatever, to reconnect with those people and say, look, we had a great relationship in the past. I'd love to show you the new product or solution. I genuinely do think it would be great for you. And we didn't actually think about that, but that's like a really long-term benefit.
Yeah, and that's one I hadn't, quite frankly, I hadn't even considered until I felt the benefits of it. I mean, as soon as I joined Lunio, that's literally what I did. I reached out to all the people I'd either sold to or nearly sold to in the past, none of which I've actually sold to here, but all of which have given me some unbelievable insight into their day-to-day, how they perceive, even almost practicing my pitch on them, to be quite frank, in some scenarios. Like, how does that resonate, Mr. and Mrs. Prospect? Like, and going from there to help almost tweak how I sell, how I word things to be really in the eyes of a marketer, just having that almost like a friendship, to be quite frank, sounds a bit weird to say, but no, absolutely. Again, not one which I've ever considered that long term for, and probably a bit bold for a lot of people to consider because it's hard to predict the future in that sense, but no, definitely one that has played out quite nicely, and I think has played out for a lot of people that I know of as well.
No, I think the friendship is a you know, I think in, especially in today's world, I think they are friendships, aren't they? Like, a lot of people are working remote or at least hybrid. So you do tend to have those weird, like peer-to-peer, B2B, I don't know, you know, colleague-to-colleague relationships, or not colleague-to-colleague, like buyer-to-seller relationships that you could maintain for like 10, 15, 20 years. I mean, our head of enterprise, you know, he called it his little black book, but he rang down his little black book of people that he used to work with 7 years ago in Manchester, and, you know, had a great chat with them and pitched them the product. And, you know, it might not be the right fit after, you know, every time, but he still had that really good relationship that he could just drop them a message and, you know, reconnect.
That's the goal to get to, isn't it?
Yeah, the little black book of sales, because you can almost get any job you want with a little black book of sales, can't you? So
absolutely.
But I know you've got a hard stop at 2 o'clock. So I think that's a nice place to round up on the talking about friendship of the, you know, the buyer seller friendship. So no, honestly, a huge thank you for coming on talking about authenticity in sales. And we'll be sure to share the share all the clips and content off the back of it. I'll probably reconnect with you in a couple of days just to ask for a couple of quotes or something. We'll, you know, share all the bits, get your feedback, but hopefully 100%. Those listening have enjoyed the episode or to taken something from it. And I think to the closing remark, I guess, is just be authentic, you know, or don't be a prick, which I guess is where we started.
Absolutely. No, thanks so much. Super exciting. And yeah, really enjoyed being here.
No, we'll wrap it up there. Thank you for listening, and we'll catch you in the next episode.